Welcome to a new episode of Product Directions Podcast, 100 Product Strategies. We are your insider access to top product leaders shaping the strategy of the most diverse industries today. I'm your host, Nacho Vassino, and I'll be digging into the real-life situations, problems, and frameworks used for strategy with product people all around the world in all kinds of products and markets. While there is no recipe for success, listening to others' experiences may give you the edge you need to solve your next strategic challenge. Hello and welcome to a new episode. Today I'm super happy because I'm with Frank Harris, who is VP of Product at Slack and also has an interesting experience in other companies like Envision, which I've been a user for a while. And without making too many spoilers, I want to focus again on the platform side of things, which we recently covered with VP of Product from Miro, but I would love to get your perspective as well. But anyways, Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And maybe to do a proper introduction about yourself, can you tell the audience a bit more about you, your background, and what you are doing lately?
Sure. So I'm at Slack. I'm VP of product platform at Slack. And when we say platform, we mean the developer platform. So not the internal platform, but the platform that our customers interact with. So that's everything from installing apps, in our third-party marketplace to help people create apps, whether those are partners or customers that might write their own integrations with Slack. But our goal is for you to do more and more work within Slack. And we know that every organization has a ton of tools, so we need to provide a way for you to integrate those tools within Slack. So that's what my team focuses on. My path into product is a bit different. That said, I feel like every leader I've met doesn't have a straight path, so maybe that's just how it is. But I actually began my career as an engineer. When I was a kid, I'm a bit old, but when I was a kid, my parents didn't buy me a Nintendo or a Sega Genesis. Instead, they bought me a Commodore 64, and then after that, I had a Pentium 8086 machine, super slow. But I am a big nerd, and I started building computers, then taking computers apart, and sometimes they would work, and sometimes they wouldn't. And then the web came along when I was in high school, and I started view sourcing on pages to understand how they worked. I was self-taught engineer. It was my first job out of college. I still write code today, just no one pays me to do it. But I was that for a bit. And then I, about 17 years ago, I moved to New York, which is where I live today. And I joined Google. And I joined Google as a UX designer. So I was that for a bit at Google for about 5 or so years. And then I joined Etsy when they were about 110 people as a product manager. I thought I was interviewing for a design role, but at the end they offered me a PM role, and I was shocked.
Took you into product management.
Yeah. So that's how it started, and that was about 10 years ago, I guess. Now, maybe a little bit more than that. But since then, been building teams. Working pre-IPO, post-IPO, large companies, super small companies, but more in a leadership capacity with building teams. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, sounds awesome. But since you have been now a good 2 years at Slack, I assume.
Good 2 years. I actually just hit my anniversary at the beginning of the month. So yeah, it's okay, crazy. Nice. It does not feel like 2 years.
Nice. I would like to explore a bit, not necessarily how you landed into the position, but more on the how it was when you had to start creating the strategy for your group, if that was a thing, or maybe trying to understand how you receive a strategy or craft a strategy or how that fits in the story.
Yeah, but then it's a really good question. So the Slack platform has been around almost as long as Slack's been around. So it's not like I arrived 2 years ago and I was like, hey, we need a platform, right? The platform already existed. And prior to joining for the previous year, the team had largely been worked on, this is not exactly the right word, but like rewriting large parts of the platform. And so that's the moment that I walked into. So let me give you some context on what we were doing. The platform had been very, very successful up until that point. I mean, still is. The platform is very, very successful. However, we kind of took a step back before I joined, and we asked ourselves some really big questions, like what would we have to do to grow platform usage by 10x? What would have to change? Like, what would be the, what are the largest, not the small paper cuts, what are the largest blockers that's impeding 10x growth, right? It was a humbling experience, right? Because we had built this thing that was really successful, right? Everyone talks about the apps that they have in Slack. And yet we were like, okay, let's ignore that for a moment. Pretend like that doesn't exist. What would have to exist? And our answer to those questions became kind of the bedrock for what we call our next generation platform. And so that's what the team had been working on for the year prior to me arriving.
Okay.
So fast forward to me joining. We're about ready to approach closed beta. And for the first time ever, we're going to also add a monetization component to the platform. So up to this point, platform had always been free. Going forward, platform would mostly be free. There'd be some advanced functionality we would charge for. And so that's when I joined. I joined as we thought about what that go-to-market motion looked like to our customers, to our sales team, to enablement within Slack. Everything from like systems integration to how we sell, how we talk about it, as well as the pricing strategy, how we get partners in the ecosystem to build out. So in a lot of ways, even though the platform existed, it was almost another 0 to 1. Mm-hmm. We weren't starting from scratch, but there was a lot of fundamental work we had to do as we brought this thing that looked similar, but was actually different, go to market. And it didn't replace the existing platform. This was complementary to it. So we were just increasing capabilities for people.
Yeah, got it. Have a couple of questions on that.
Yeah.
The first one is, how did you define, you mentioned that the platform has been successful so far. How was success defined in this scenario?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a few different ways we can think about success, right? So, you know, we have, we look at the number of apps people have built, right? And so, you know, on our Slack platform, you can go to the app directory and you can install an app, right? Mm-hmm. Or you can write your own.
Yep.
And there's about 2,600 apps in our third-party app directory that are free to use. You can grab and go. And we don't release publicly, but there's more apps that people have built internally, right? So that was an early signal that, okay, there's a strong desire for people to bring their tools and integrations into Slack. Other things we look at might be the number of messages in Slack that are driven by an integration, right? Yeah. So that could be something else. The average enterprise has 1,000 pieces of software, which is just mind blowing. Yeah, it's funny. Every time I talk to customers about this, I just get head nodding. Like, and usually I'm talking to like the teams that are responsible, and they don't smile. They it's closer to crying when and they're like, no, we have more than that. Is, you know, that's a lot of tools. And every time you switch from Slack to another tool, you're less efficient, right? Research shows it takes 10 minutes to get back into the flow when you switch. Yeah. And so this is a huge opportunity for us and a huge opportunity for customers to improve their efficiency and productivity by being able to do more work within Slack, and integrations is the cornerstone of that.
That's interesting because maybe it goes into my direction. I don't want to get too deep before talking about strategy, but that sounds also very hard to measure. That's why I was asking about the success criteria, because at the end of the day, if you want to be this glue that corrects things, you know, I'm not sure, you cannot take inventory of what all companies have or things like that. So, maybe this new phase, are you thinking about these metrics differently?
I mean, we can explore that more. I mean, I think one of the things that product people, and I say that with love, a lot of love, we overcomplicate metrics maybe too quickly, especially starting off, right? So the earliest signal for a platform being successful is, you know, integrations. Do people have integrations? Then you might think about how often they're used. You might think about who uses them, right? So as an example, broad statement here, right? But an integration that's used by everyone in your organization tends to be more valuable than an integration that's used by a couple of people in your organization. That's not always true, okay? But like super broad strokes, right? And so you can keep adding additional layers, but I try to start the most basic, simple thing that gives me initial direction, and then I make it more sophisticated over time, right? So you can think about diversity of users. You could think about frequency of use. You could think about departments that use these integrations, right? You could think about, and all of this you can do without actually having to spend a lot of time talking to the customer, right? But if you had time to talk to the customer, you could also do case studies on particular integrations. Tell me how you use this integration. Tell me if you didn't have this integration, what would your process be, right? You could even get more sophisticated. You could think about like the amount of hours that you save, or the amount of you could convert those hours into money if you knew people's salary, right? Mm-hmm. But at the moment, the frequency of use and diversity of users really help drive a lot of strategy as we think about it.
That makes sense. So at the end of the day, what you are doing in the platform contributes to a bigger picture of usage and diversity of users. So I guess that. So
it's possible, right? Like, I don't know when you first started using Slack, but most companies, when they first start using Slack, it starts as a department tool. It starts as a way for PMs, designers, and engineers to use Slack, right? And then in some organizations, it grows to everyone using Slack. And that's a process that could happen in months. It could happen in years. It could happen in weeks, right? It's possible that the right integrations could drive or accelerate that growth of Slack within an organization, right? And that's also really valuable to us. An example of that might be people submitting their time off reports or expense approving or interview feedback when they're interviewing a candidate. Now, these are things that everyone in an organization has to do, not just people in tech, right? Yeah. And generally speaking, people hate those tools. And so if you could do those tools within Slack, that then might make sense then for more people in your organization to have Slack, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's another way to think about it.
Yeah, love it, love it. Then with all that context and then my diversion questions, let's go back in track. You mentioned that you champion when this thing is ongoing, so this transformation is ongoing. Does it have already go-to-market strategy? Does it have already a vision? Well, a vision, I assume yes, because you mentioned kind of this 10x growth behind it. So what tools did you have? How do they look like when you join?
The team had, prior to joining, as I said, the team had been really heads down on building the platform. And that makes sense, right? Yeah. But you know, if I were to use like a metaphor here, the team had spent a lot of time building the foundation of the house and the bricks. Mm-hmm. Maybe they started thinking about where the windows of the house should be, but they had not yet built a brochure on the sort of houses you can build, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so At the end of the day, in enterprise software, the most successful people in enterprise software, and this is also probably true of just selling in general, customers want to buy a solution to their problems. They're not usually looking to buy materials. I'm looking for a house. I'm not looking for bricks. If I buy a house, it might have bricks. That's great. Okay. But I'm not like, oh, I need 1,000 bricks. So that's where I first started to focus on what are the houses that we're selling? Are we selling a vacation home? Okay, cool. We're selling a vacation home by the sea? Well, should we sell a vacation home in the mountains for skiing? Like, what are the different solutions that our platform can support? Now, the fact of the matter is a platform can support unlimited number of solutions. We have to start with some inspiration, right?
The showcase.
And so pretty early started working with product marketing, test driving some of that with the sales team. How does this resonate? The other thing too is that the sales team is already, they're having to sell houses for Slack as a whole when they talk with customers. And so it's also understanding what is their existing pitch and how does our story fit into it? None of this needs to change what we've built. This is largely a positioning exercise, but it's a very important one. Because if it doesn't resonate, then no one discovers the platform.
Yeah.
Not no one, but it limits the adoption of the platform. So narratives, pitch decks, conversations like this, whiteboarding. Those are some of the earliest things. Yeah.
Two questions to that. The first one is, you have this, so you have been building this new platform because you already have the ambition to grow 10x. Which is sort of like a complaint, but why haven't the company itself, because you were not there yet, haven't thought about it yet? Because I'm building a thing, I'm not sure it will fly. So that was kind of my question. Shouldn't this be a two-sided exercise before building it?
Yeah. And so maybe I'm doing a bit of disservice. The team had thought about these things. But to the depth that you need to bring the sales team along, it wasn't the right timing until now.
Okay.
Because the sales team couldn't sell it until now, right? Yeah. So, it would be unfair to say that we hadn't thought about the solutions. We hadn't yet built their narrative to the degree that was necessary to start involving the sales team.
Nice.
Look, it's possible that we should have done that sooner, right? But hindsight's 20/20. But I would say that maybe that answers your question there.
Yeah, I got it. And the second part is, how much of this definition that we are doing, this inspiration, these pitch decks, will influence the upcoming product strategy? So is this something that's already building on top of what we have, or do we need to build more features or?
Yeah. So it's a good question. There's maybe a couple parts here. So since we're evolving our platform, we had a strong understanding of the use cases that people would use this for.
Yeah.
Right. We were just building a platform, maybe in a more efficient way for us and for them. But the use cases were very similar. There was also third-party comps, whether you think of Zapier or Workato or ServiceNow, that do similar things to what we were looking to do. So we were creating our spin on this automation, efficiency, productivity platform, but it wasn't completely bespoke to what was already in the market. So for that reason, we were kind of using our own blueprint, and we were also looking at where customers were to figure out where we were driving. We weren't imagining a new product that had never existed in the world before. But that doesn't exactly answer your question. I want to give that context, though. The pitch decks and the narratives, did not influence product strategy.
Okay.
It was just communicating the value and the inspiration for what we were building.
Got it. So more of I sounds like more the go-to market, which is a bit distant from kind of or after building the product.
Yeah. I mean, we would do other visioning exercises, but that they weren't solely go-to-market focused. And those visioning exercises would influence the product strategy, but for this, no, it was very go-to-market. Like, how do we frame in the best possible scenario and light the work that we built?
Perfect. Then in the last 2 years journey, so we got to the point when you joined the company, but at one point in this journey, do you feel the need to either iterate the strategy or create a new strategy or consolidate it or pivot somehow? Just to give us some context on, okay, this is was the time in which probably we set up a new strategy or we work on it.
Yeah, so I would say largely things are panning out the way we thought they would. And, you know, we're building a platform and business that will be measured in like minimum 5 years, just being realistic, right? Like, it takes a while to build these things. And so remember when I said we wanted 10x usage of platform? So there were three like beliefs, let's call them beliefs, tenets, principles that we felt we needed to do to make that true. Okay. So one is we wanted to reduce the burden of creating an integration. So prior to this, in the existing platform, if you wanted to create an integration, you had to create your own infrastructure to run that integration on. And in some companies, you had to buy a server, or you had to get it provisioned, or you had to work with a security team, or you had to have a budget. And we thought that for every individual that went through that maze, there's probably 6 or 8 or 10 people that said, "Ah, it's not worth it," and they just stop right there, right? Yeah. Because you know they have 18 other thousand other things to do, and like they don't want to go through that bureaucracy, right? So we said, okay. We need to lower the barrier for creating an integration. So our answer to that is we've created a serverless environment that you can deploy your apps on at no additional cost. And it has the same security as the rest of your Slack instance. So we were like, that's turnkey. That addresses that, right? Second thing is we wanted every line of code that someone wrote to be more valuable in the new world versus the old world. And the way we accomplished that is, as part of our like refactoring of parts of our platform, we made it more modular. And so if you wrote a function over here, you could then leverage that function and another integration over here, and then over here, and then over here, and over here. Mm-hmm. We thought of this internally as like Lego blocks. So you could stack them together. Because the phenomenon that we saw happening was for someone building an integration, maybe they built it for Department A. Maybe they built it for the marketing team, right? The IT team built an integration for the marketing team. Marketing team loves it. They love it so much, they're telling all their friends in the organization, right? And then the PR team sees that and they're like, oh, we want that. Mm-hmm. And we just need to make two changes. And so the IT team seems fine, right? What they have to do is they have to duplicate the code base. They have to get another server to run it on, okay? They do everything they did before. And then they have to start making those tweaks. And then when they talk with PR, it's not actually two tweaks. It's like 10 tweaks, right? Because that's how it is. And then they launch it. And they kind of, the IT team kind of becomes a victim of their own success because now they have increased surface area for things they have to manage. And this does not scale. So fast forward to our kind of goal of making every line of code more valuable. We wanted to make it more modular so that IT team would not have to create two distinct integrations. There would just be one integration and they could easily add support for that PR team. And then the third thing that we wanted to do to kind of make it 10x is we wanted to give more power to non-technical users, to people that didn't write code, to create very robust integrations and workflows. And, you know, you could almost think of those three beliefs as phases. So we've done the first phase and the second phase. And right now in this journey post-launch, we're really focusing a lot on how we provide more, not capabilities, but how we make it more intuitive for non-technical users to build very powerful integrations, right? And so we have a low-code tool, but you know, we think about things like templates, we think about things like variables, the usability of this tool, how you discover this tool. I mean, the good news for us is that's kind of Slack's sweet spot, right? Like Slack took an enterprise product and gave it a real consumer feel to it. It's very easy to use. And so that's the playbook we're following as we try to bring more power in creating workflows to non-technical users. So that's where we're at in our execution. The team is super focused on it. We're doing a lot to make it easier to use. But that's where we're at. And I imagine as we get feedback from users, we'll continue to iterate and maybe like course correct on how we realize that vision.
That's a good point, because my next question is going in the lines of, do you have this big driver or strategic pillar, let's go that way? Do you have something that connects to a more concrete plan or more concrete quarterly, I won't say roadmap, but quarterly objectives that the team may handle? And how is the process of splitting this into more concrete things?
Yeah, so we do quarterly planning. I would say that for our level of maturity in our products, relatively young, right? We launched publicly to all customers last May, so still early, right? Because one other thing about a developer platform, and this was something I was going to share later, but I'll go ahead and say it now because it's perfect timing, is we can build these raw materials, these experiences, but our customers have to have the time to build, right? And have to have something they need to build. And so those have to align. And in the exception of very few companies, everyone that's building these workflows and integrations and automations, and I'm using those all interchangeably, but it's no one, except for very few companies, it's no one's full-time job to do that, right? The people that build them are like intrinsically motivated to improve their life and their life of their colleagues. And they do it maybe during like a hack week or, if it's a slow time during the holidays or a code freeze or something like that. So we're really early in our journey because, you know, things have to take time. But we plan quarterly with our product. We have a pretty good idea of where we want to go 2 quarters out. Mm-hmm. And it's just that it's a plan. Like, we'll use feedback to kind of iterate. But as we think about driving more adoption, here are some areas that we're thinking about. We're thinking about templates a lot. Mm-hmm. The majority the majority of workflows that are used with the highest frequency come from templates, mm-hmm. right? Which mm-hmm. makes sense. Right. So it's a form of inspiration. We think about that. We think about the overall low code builder experience. Mm-hmm. We think about what are the Lego blocks we need? Maybe those Lego blocks Slack needs to build for you to build a workflow, mm-hmm. or maybe we need to work with a partner to build some.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and then we also think about how we share workflows with each other internally, because that's another way to drive discoverability.
Love it. One follow-up question to that is, how do you uncover these things that you think about? So this is what a topic I call about or mention as the insights we are having to decide what to focus on. And how are these insights being collected by the team, and how are they shared in a mirror board? Or, well, what is the way of collecting this and try to think through them?
Yeah. So no surprise to you, and I'm sure others, at Slack, we use Slack a lot in our product development process. Shocking, I know. So a few ways we do this. Every feature we work on has a dedicated channel to that. And usually there's multiple versions of that. There's a channel for the team that's building it. There's channels for feedback, right? If the sales team, or we hear things from customers, with our support team, of people having issues. And so that's one way we organize. Something else we do is, with all of our roadmap planning, we record clips. And then we share them asynchronously. We do that for roadmaps as well as customer feedback. So when we get into a room, we can just jump into the most interesting part, which is the discussion, and we don't have to do a lot of like table setting. The other thing that we do, and this is where it kind of ties back to go to market, is I gave an example of, we think about like, what are the building blocks we need, right? Yeah. Like what are those third party integrations that we need? Well, that goes back to the go to market. What are the companies that we're trying to sell this to? Or a better question is, what are the departments we want to sell this to? Now, the answer is every company, every department in time, okay? But this quarter or next quarter or for this year, what do we want to focus on? Because if you told me we want to focus on automations for PDE, product design engineering for tech teams, I would go Jira, Atlassian, Trello, all the DevOps tools, right? I would do that. If you told me marketing, I would go campaign management, campaign monitor, MailChimp, Google Analytics, Tableau, right? And so, you know, we have to think about like, what is the customer we're going after? What are the integrations that they need? Otherwise, we might be building integrations that no one uses, or no one uses right now. And then we're like, why is no one using our integrations? Well, we have a mismatch here, right? We build integrations for a department we're not focusing on. So this is a way that we do try to keep close to our target go-to-market customer.
That's a great spot to pick your brain a bit further. How do, or even whom participates on that decision and how it's decided? Because I assume that, I mean, you can say simply, you know, volume of users, or I will go for call centers because they are huge in number of users. Or you might say, hey, this is a more strategic customer, or if it's more sales driven, or it's more like product opportunity driven. Yeah. So I see a lot of different angles you can take there.
Yeah, no, there's so many different ways you can take it. And I would say that, so a few things. There's so many different ways you can take it. The other thing to keep in mind is that because we are a platform, even if an integration doesn't exist, the customer could write their own to do that. So that's a bit of an escape hatch. Or maybe if it's a really important customer, maybe we write it for them, right?
Yeah.
So that allows us to be very laser focused on certain departments, but we still have an out, if you will, if we need to. We can still flex to that if we need to. Mm-hmm. Now, those conversations, how are those decisions made? So those conversations are very strategic. And so we'll start talking about it as a team at the lowest level, and then it will work its way up to our Slack executives. So when I say that, I think about my boss, and I think about his boss, which is our chief product officer, as well as our CTO. And our CTO is also a founder. And I think what's important to realize, and what I was talking about here, which user we go after, it's really just about where we start. We want to go after all of those users. We want to go after tech teams and the marketing team and sales team and customer service teams and all the departments of an organization. It's where we want to start. Where are we going to get the best feedback? Where are we going to iterate the product the fastest? Where are we going to learn the most that then maybe allows us to scale faster later? And for us, it's focusing on the tech and the tech community, because they already use Slack. They already use a lot of these integrations. We think that they'll probably be the most vocal group that will give us feedback, which is useful as we're building. We believe if we can get that demanding customer right, then we can those learnings will be able to scale, and then it's a quicker on-ramp, right? So for us, that's how we approached it. But it's a sequencing thing. It's not a, we don't ever want to go after this customer. It's just sequence of when to start.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Maybe a follow-up question on this selection. So now we have how we select the right customer. Then you have, as you said, kind of probably multiple options on what to integrate or even how to evolve the platform to enable more integrations. The question I have more is around how do you prioritize versus the KPIs you are pursuing? And maybe just to clarify what's on my head is, and you mentioned this a few times maybe, the indicators you have are very lagging indicators. So we say, I want to improve usage, but the usage will come after someone realizes there is a platform, starts building it, put it into the marketplace and adopt it. So very long cycle.
So this is imperfect. Okay. And you're 100% right. If we're only measuring at the end of the funnel, that's not good. we're just not going to move fast enough.
Yeah.
So there are some proxy metrics we look at, and we kind of stitch these together, right? So I'll give you an example. Let me also take a step back and say there's different KPIs here, right? There could be we want to empower more developers to create integrations. There could be we want to empower non-technical users to create integrations. And then there's another one, which is arguably the most valuable. We want more integrations to run.
Mm-hmm.
We don't care who creates them. We just want them to run more often.
Execution.
And so we need to think about all three of those. Now they're layered and they're complementary, right? You can only run what exists. Mm-hmm. You can't run integration that doesn't exist. Yeah. So for on the developer side, we might look at SDK downloads, tooling downloads. So we've created some tooling. Mm-hmm. Are people downloading the tooling? If they're not, then they're not going to build anything, right? We might look at sandbox environments that are created. People don't, even Slack integrations, people do not want to build in production, right? So they're going to set up a separate instance and they start testing, right? So those are really good early green shoots. Now, I also said that the majority of workflows and integrations come from templates.
Yeah.
Right? So if we want to drive more creation, one might say we need to create a lot more templates.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's because of that relationship, we believe if we create more templates, it'll lead to more creations, which will lead to more runs. So that's how we try to decompose it a bit. Right. We might also look at how often a workflow is shared. Right?
Yeah.
Or we might look at when a workflow runs in a channel, how many other people are in that channel? That could be a proxy for how useful it is. Right? Yeah. So it's not perfect, but we look for these proxy metrics that we have validated and know to be true, at least at an earlier scale, and we try to push on those. And then we measure the end of the funnel. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So the lagging will be there, but probably and it goes back to what you were saying, the feedback loop you get on the end of the funnel is so long that it will not be super useful for product decisions.
It's so long, right? I mean, there's other things. We do like webinars, we do customer engagements. Are those being attended, right? Those are more synchronous, but they can also be an indication.
Yeah, got it. Makes sense. Okay, so then maybe some final questions to the strategy process. The strategy itself, in the three pillars or the quarterly plans, they do you have some sort of document for that? They live somewhere? How do you share them on Slack?
Yeah. So we create. There's a few artifacts we create. I mean. The team always, a lot of our teams use Jiras and write up epics, right? But those are not what we would share with executives. Probably the most common thing that we share with executives at a quarterly plan, it is a deck. It is a slide deck.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But I would say within the quarter, we also have meetings with executives, and those tend to be more one or two pager. Just pros. It could be a deck, but I would say quarterly plans are almost always a deck. It tends to be the best visual when you're doing a clip and you're talking about your plans. It works better than a document. But when we have small group meetings and we talk about our progress throughout the quarter, those commonly are documents. We try not to be super rigid on process. Where we have templates or like we want the deck in this particular format, it's meant as a way for people to be able to create the artifacts faster versus like, if you don't use the right font, I will not acknowledge your plans, right? No. It is an aid in creating these artifacts for discussion. It's not a substitute for strategy. It's not crazy rigid. And if you don't want to use a deck, like your hand doesn't get slapped or anything. They're meant to be aids.
Okay, perfect. And then maybe that's a bit ready to what I was going to ask later, which is the connection between the platform strategy, which seems to be very, very solid and kind of pinned the platform team to the other parts of Slack. So maybe it's around the lines of how it's connected to the bigger picture, like the Slack vision overall, and maybe how you collaborate with your peers, assume there are peers, like, I know, the Slack communication tool itself or things like that, how you integrate.
Yeah. No, it's a good question. So I would say it happens probably in two different ways. So one, going into the year, we do some high level product strategy work. We as a company, usually it's my boss and his peers and the chief product officer, but they'll think like super high level, like how is our offering going to all stitch together? What is going to be our focus? Right?
Yeah.
This could be thematic. It's not implementation details at all. That provides a baseline for coordination between the large pieces of work that everyone's doing.
Yeah.
It sets an expectation.
Yeah.
As an example, part of that might be part of a vision that might be given at that kind of yearly or twice a year level is we really want to focus, I'm making this up, but we really want to focus on helping customers automate more of their tools within Slack. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's something largely that the platform team will carry on, but they'll sometimes need help from others. Right. But by saying it at the high level, it gives me permission to now go and speak with others and say, remember that? So this is kind of what we're doing now.
Right? Sorry.
And what that might look like is, right, exactly. So what that might look like is the rest of Slack is building amazing tools, right? Whether it's Huddles or Clips or Canvas, right? So much functionality. Or they revamp the save to list items. We might have an ask to go to them and say, we want you to build a Lego block for your feature so people can then tie that into an integration that they're doing, right? Yes. And so that might require quarterly collaboration, right? Mm-hmm. But it's under the overall strategy that's kind of given at the high level. And as an example, in that last example, we do work with the feature teams on building those blocks. And we've actually created like a kind of like a how-to guide to make it as easy as possible for them to build to build one of those steps. And then that also drives usage of their product, right?
That's awesome. So they create they collaborate to the platform by integrating their features into the Lego blocks. That's super cool.
And we have precedent for that Slack, except for like high level like monitoring and authentication APIs. Feature teams own their APIs.
Okay, great. That makes sense.
So that's good. In some ways, like a Lego block is like another kind of API, if you will.
Yeah.
So it would make sense for them to own that too.
Great.
But we're going to provide guidance. We want to make them as efficient as possible in creating it. Right.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. I think I'm being cautious of time because I think we cover a lot of ground and probably all the processes are now laid out, I want to ask my typical closing question, which is, what's one learning about strategy that you had in the past and we didn't cover through the questions we went through today?
I think one thing that I have, maybe I knew it, but in the last year, I was reminded of it, maybe even learned it again, if you will, is, even in large companies, and maybe this is especially true of large companies, it's easy to drift from being super close to your customer because you're very focused on, the work that's in front of you. And I think we talk a lot about that in our industry as we build products, and there's ways for you to collaborate and reach out and talk with customers. But in enterprise SaaS, another one of your customers is your sales team. Mm-hmm. And product-led growth is amazing, but you also need to understand your sales team as a customer. And so since launch of our new developer capabilities of our platform, I've done a lot of customer calls. In like 2 months, I probably did 100 customer calls riding shotgun with the sales team. And, you think about it, like the sales team gets 30 minutes with a customer, and that 30 minutes, they're going to pitch some new capabilities. But that's probably only going to be about 10 minutes because the rest of the time they want to listen and understand their problems. And then hopefully if it resonates enough, they'll then come back and they'll follow up conversation, right?
Yeah.
10 minutes to get everything that you want to talk about across to your customer, and looking at like what the sales teams are going to talk about what they understand the most. Sales teams are going to talk about what they're most confident about. And if they don't understand the product that you're working on, or if they're not confident, or they don't feel like they have the right talk track to talk to customers about it in the way that it will serve, they're just not going to talk about it with them. They're just not, because there's more than enough content for everything that's being built to talk to a customer about to fill that 10 minutes. So how do you get that 10 minutes? And I think it requires a super close collaboration with sales. Otherwise, like, you're closing off that adoption path. Maybe that's okay, right? Maybe that means you need to double down on product-led growth if you can't. But, for me, I want all the things. I want product-led growth and I want top-down sales. Okay. What we're doing is hard enough. Like, I don't want to add any more limits to what we're doing and obstacles, right? So I want everyone to preach the gospel. And that requires real work and collaboration with sales team. It does not happen for free.
Yeah, I love it. And so there is no need for one or the other. So you can do both, a product-led and sales-led. And the other thing, I reflecting what you were saying, I think super important, is the previous work that you mentioned around positioning. And that's not a product work. That's a cross-function work with marketing, with sales, with probably other folks. And it should be the foundation of your product strategy. I mean, going back to what you were saying, you need to make sure that these 10 minutes that sales is spending talking with the customer is related to what you are building on the product strategy. And the best way to do it is to align that previously on the position.
That's right. And I agree with you. That messaging is cross-functional work. I'll give you one more slight learning that I've had, one more small, tiny, tiny learning. And that is, when you're building a really technical product, yes, it's cross-functional, but I think it requires more of the product team to educate and drive that messaging and positioning with the other people in the organization. And I think that's necessary because it's a technical product, right?
Yeah.
And you understand that better than your cross-functional partners, which are likely not technical.
Yeah.
It's marriage. You need to work together, but maybe in like a more consumer offering, the heavy lifting doesn't need to be done by the product team. I think in a technical product, it does.
Love it. Love it. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, Frank, this has been wonderful. A lot of learnings, a lot of insights. Where can people find you if you want to be found, and how they can support you, if they can support you in any way?
Yeah, so I'm on X, I'm on Twitter, whatever we want to call it. My handle on all the platforms, whether it's LinkedIn or X, is Hire Frank, HIREFRANK, as in I want a job. I do not need a job, but I bought that domain, hirefrank.com, my last semester of college, yes. And I've just kept renewing it every year. It truthfully makes my employers nervous. Because they worry that I'm not happy. But I think they should be a little nervous, right? Because we're all free agents. So exactly. You can reach out to me on my website, on LinkedIn, Twitter, X, whatever. Come find me.
Lovely. Thank you very much. And yeah, thanks for all the insights you shared today with us.
Amazing. Awesome. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of 100 Product Strategies, the podcast by Product Direction. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Instagram to get access to free weekly content that helps product people upgrade their skills and become more successful. You can access more material, promotional trainings, and be notified of every episode of the show with Product Direction's weekly newsletter. Join thousands of product leaders by registering in productdirection.co.